Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we're down to 16 teams, and we're going to go a little deep, dive into the deep end of the pool with the NCAA stuff. Our guy John Rothstein is back, and I get a lot of sleep these days. I know sleep, sleep in June?
We sleep in May.
Sleep in May. That is John, CBS Sports College Hoops Insider, SI as well, College Hoops Podcast. He's got that. Leonard Hamilton this week, right?
You got it. BT's all over it.
Hey, listen, you gotta do your homework on this thing. All right, couple of things. We don't need to belabor this, although we could. The foul or the non-call on Barrett, would you have called that a foul? You know which play I'm talking about. The offensive rebound. Is that a foul?
I think it's a foul. I don't think it gets called in that spot.
Well, it obviously didn't get called. But do you think it should get called?
Do I think it should get called?
If it's a foul.
I think there's a lot of calls over the weekend that were poor calls, most notably the call in the Tennessee-Iowa game when there was a foul on Lamonte Turner. Obviously, you know, fouling an Iowa player in a three-point game late in the game. Now, Turner came down and buried a three from the left wing, and people forgot about that. But there's a number of calls when you watch all these games that you could say are tough calls.
It's funny because in the NCAA tournament, I don't
think they're tough, though. I think foul's a foul. What's so tough about that?
They don't become talking points. They rarely become talking points. This is the one example, maybe because BT.
And Ben Zion had a charge, too, before the N1.
But I thought UCF lost the game, though, when they tried to throw an alley-oop up four with, you know, a minute 40 left. That's where they lost the game. They didn't lose the game because they gave up an offensive rebound. They had a chance to go up maybe plus six and work another 20 seconds off the clock.
Yeah, but hold on. You say that with such certainty, and I'm mostly with you. But that doesn't take the refs off the hook for not making the right call that would have still enabled UCF to win the game.
Well, I don't think they made the right call as well on the other end when they ruled the Taco Fall shot a dunk. That's another thing.
Talk about the violation, non-violation.
Violation, right. Yeah. But you play the game based on the calls that are made on the floor. And, you know, they had possession up four with about 90 seconds or 100 seconds left. And they chose to throw an alley-oop rather than be in a scenario where they could have obviously brought the ball back out.
What does this inform us about Duke? I mean, because, look, you and UCF, maybe a lot of people don't know much about them. They have a huge big man. So, what do you have, three blocks on Zion, which is rare. Three dunks, which is also rare on Zion. What does this inform us about Duke, if anything at all?
That they're capable of winning a game like this, a white knuckler in a big spot. And as we've talked about, you know, time and time again the last couple of weeks, this team does not have a veteran presence with NCAA tournament experience that's playing a major role. In 2015, you had Quinn Cook, Emile Jefferson, and Matt Jones. Last year, you had Grayson Allen. This year, it is all on the kids. And, you know, I said when the tournament came out that the UCF matchup was going to be a difficult matchup because, obviously, UCF forces you to go over the top of the defense. And you saw Trey Jones and Goldwire pretty much be left alone on an island there.
Yep.
To see if they could make three. So that's exactly what happened.
We're talking to John Rothstein, Johnson Studio, this segment, next segment as well. If you want to get some tweets and questions, hit us up on Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. John, of course, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, SI, recently added that to the portfolio. John continues to grow. College Hoops Podcast, Leonard Hamilton, he's with us in studio.
Oh, you have Leonard Hamilton on the
podcast? Go ahead, say it.
Now we love that.
Say it.
Black don't crack.
Say it.
And I just read a story about he's making a ton of money from the success that he's getting.
He's like getting nice bonuses.
The incentives for how far that they're going.
I didn't see what kind of triggers.
I think it's like 600 grand he's making.
For each round?
If he goes, gets to the Final Four, I believe it is, he's going to make $600,000 in bonuses.
If you get to the Final Four of Florida State.
That's more than,
I mean, back-to-back Sweet 16s.
I know.
He deserves it, and he likes it. But Virginia Tech, going back to Duke, Duke is taking on a fellow ACC squad, Virginia Tech. Blackshear is playing, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a chance?
They definitely have a chance, Deke. You know, the interesting thing about the matchup between Duke and Virginia Tech, they played a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Virginia Tech didn't have Justin Robinson. Duke didn't have Zion Williamson. But this game, proximity-wise, isn't that far from Blacksburg, and it also isn't that far from Durham. So those two programs should be very well represented in Washington, D.C., and Buzz Williams has experience coaching.
Palpable Buzz Williams.
Palpable Buzz Williams. Say it spreads. He has experience coaching in the Sweet 16 in D.C. He won a Sweet 16 game there over Miami when he was the head coach of Marquette in 2013.
He's a great coach. Yeah. I mean, it is not easy to win at Virginia Tech. He's done a great job. I don't know how long he's going to be there. We'll see. You know, before we lose sight of UCF entirely, one thing that you've tweeted a lot, at least pertaining to them, not just a football school, if I have that right.
More than just a football school.
And they've got the football budget. They've got some football pedigree for sure. Pretty good talent out there in you know, Central Florida, Orlando. Is this, who knows how long Dawkins stays, maybe takes over for Coach K, blah, blah, blah. But are the seeds planted for UCF to become maybe like a Southern Cincinnati? Can they have that kind of an imprint and be good for a long time here, do you think?
You know, I think, you know, when we look at Cincinnati, Cincinnati is one of six programs that's made the NCAA tournament nine straight years. I think if they had a year to break through and have a seminal moment, it was this year.
Yeah.
B.J. Taylor, Taco Fall. Obviously, you could see right now Aubrey Dawkins being a candidate for the next level with the way that he played. So we'll see. I think that there's some seeds in place to be competitive in the top half of the American Conference, but with everything aligned the way it was, this was their year to make the NCAA tournament. This was their year to make a run, which makes yesterday obviously that much more difficult to swallow. You know, I think, too, we get so caught up in one shining moment and obviously all the great moments that there are from in March. We saw the other side yesterday.
Those
UCF kids in the locker room and, you know, Your heart feels for that.
Yeah, because they think they were the better team. And they played
like the better team. They outplayed Duke yesterday.
They'll think that the rest of their lives.
Right.
And that's a challenge for a young man or a young woman to compartmentalize that properly, because you don't get any real defined resolution. It's just something you got to carry around, and you're not going to play the game again. They're not going to call the foul that they should have twice. John, what was more surprising to you? I think your answer is going to probably be Murray State because of how good their guard is. But Murray State losing by 28 or Villanova losing by 26?
Villanova losing by 26.
Why is that?
Well, the one thing that Murray State was able to exploit against Marquette was not an overwhelmingly athletic team. So Ja Morant's ability to penetrate, pitch, find teammates, that was a little bit more magnified because of the team he was going against. We knew that would change against Florida State. For Villanova to be non-competitive in a game, you know, in the NCAA tournament like that, I thought that the St. Mary's game would be a white knuckler. It was. They came out on top. But, you know, to see Villanova dominated like that in a big stage and look up and they're down 30 in the second half, that's something you probably haven't seen in over 5 years.
That's interesting.
And we knew they weren't vintage, but yeah 30 agreed. Points is, right. Yeah, that's not Jay Wright's program.
No, that was ugly. Gonzaga, who we, I don't know, just maybe started to cut down a little bit because of the fact that they lost to St. Mary's in the conference championship. They're back on track. They feel like they deserve to be number one, just like they have been. No worries, no hangovers, no nothing for Gonzaga, right? This they go through.
Well, T, you know, it's interesting. I talked about this with Jim Boeheim once. He told me that whenever he has made runs in the NCAA tournament, he has always been knocked out, obviously, of the conference tournament early, and his team is a little hungrier, a little fresher. Look at Houston and look at Gonzaga in the first two games. Never really a doubt in any of those two games.
Yeah.
And those were two teams that were surprised in their conference tournament. You know, and I talked to, Mick Cronin, you know, since that, you know, recently as well, that's a situation where, you know, for all intents and purposes, they've won the last 2 years and so on and so forth. But they've also been in a scenario where they, for all intents and purposes, have had to deal with the expectation of playing on Sunday and then turning around and playing Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. Look, who was it? I think it was Rome. I think Rome had few on earlier today. So I heard a little bit of the interview. I didn't realize how consistent they have been, Gonzaga. How do you, with a program that feels small, I mean, they're way up there in Spokane on the far west coast and at the top of the country, how are they sustaining this program? How is he doing this?
Well, why do you think he's doing it? Great players.
I'm asking you.
Great players.
I think
it's great players. It's great players.
Yeah, but how is he getting all of these
That's the question.
This is the thing. Great transfers. And that's one thing that we've seen. Great transfers are in a scenario where they want to go to Gonzaga. Look at their success right now. When they went to a national title game, Nigel Williams-Goss from where? Washington. Jonathan Williams from Missouri. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, Ron Dane and Tiki Barber, but great players, whether it's football or whatever, you know, it's the same thing. And Kyle Wiltshire from Kentucky. Like, I mean, neither are great players on this team. Rui Hachimura is going to be a top five pick in the draft. I mean, the personnel, and I talked to Leonard Hamilton about this earlier, Teak. You know, it's interesting. He said, when I watch Gonzaga on film, it's like I'm watching an ACC team.
Yeah.
I mean, Florida State recruited Zach Norvell, who's, you know, was an assassin for them.
But I think the other thing is, like, you know, Mark Few, and you would know this, the temptation to leave, it doesn't seem like it's there now. What was the heaviest flirtation?
There never was one.
Gonzaga never had to fend off any school.
Did he listen to Indiana? Did he listen to Oregon? But, you know, Mark Few isn't concerned with what everybody else thinks he should be doing. Mark Few isn't going to say, you know, because I'm coaching college basketball, my job is so much more important than anybody else's. Yep. If one of his assistants wants to go watch his son's soccer game, he'll change practice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
he is
totally somebody.
Well, this is five straight, right? Five straight Sweet 16s?
Well, let's think about this. Last year they went in 17. Mm-hmm. They went in 16, they lost to Syracuse. And in 15, they lost in a regional final to Duke.
So five straight. I mean, it's hard to think about a program that's, I mean, there's 8,000 kids at that school.
It's small.
You know what I mean?
It's a good academic school.
It's a very good academic school to sustain a program that usually think, because, like, you see these schools, like, they feel smaller. They lose a couple of kids. And
like Wichita State.
Yeah. And you
take a step back. Yeah, you can't help it.
And it's not their fault. No. It's just they don't have enough good kids.
No, they don't reload. They've got to rebuild.
He reloads like Duke reloads or Virginia.
The transfer thing, Teak, is a big thing because, like, you know, perfect example is Brandon Clark. Yeah. You know, was that San Jose State 2 years ago? Mm. San Jose State wasn't winning a lot of games.
No.
He goes, he redshirts.
I think, right? San Jose State, are they the Spartans?
Yeah, he redshirts. Now, all of a sudden, breaks Adam Morrison's record in the NCAA tournament. It's players. Yeah. It's player development. But there's no magic wand, I think, in any of this. I think, you know, you have to have a scenario where you're withstanding the test of time when it comes to being committed to a place. And Mark Few's committed to Gonzaga.
Quick on this, because I want to get a break, come back, and really dive into the games coming up a little bit more specifically. John Rothstein's with us in studio here. I feel like we position certain coaches either as, like, the CEO type that can recruit and bring in, even though I think when we do that, we kind of underrate their actual coaching instincts, which I think is unfair. I think Calipari actually gets adversely knocked in that manner. I think he's a better coach than people think. But somebody like John Beilein is lauded as a brilliant tactician, which I know he is. Is Mark Few a great X's and O's guy, or is he merely really good with really good players?
Probably.
Like, where does he rank on the chalkboard?
I think a combination of both. And the perfect example, and, you know, I was kidding with Tiki about Thunder and Lightning, throwing out the Ron Dane reference, but the team in 2017 that lost to North Carolina was a physically imposing team with Shemek Karnowski and Zach Collins and Jonathan Williams.
Yeah.
And this team has kind of evolved into a hybrid forward look up front with Clark and Hachimura. This is a potent offensive team.
Do they benefit more so when UCLA's really down? It's got to help their profile a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely helps their profile. It definitely helps the profile, too, that Arizona isn't vintage Arizona, you know, this year for sure. But, I think that this team is a much more skilled team than the team we saw that won a national championship 2 years ago. Or, excuse me, it lost in the title game to North Carolina 2 years ago and, you know, lost one game during the regular season.
All right, get your questions in on Twitter at Teak and Tierney. Rothstein is in for another segment. We'll really dive into some of the matchups coming up. Teak and Tierney as we get ready for the Sweet 16, but still unpacking for what went down over the weekend. So, by the way, third hour, we'll get to the Celtics mess. Kyrie Irving, I mean, not even masking his critique of Brad Stevens.
Somebody
he just leveled him.
He's not there next year. He can't be.
No, there's no way. The question is, do I even want him on the Knicks? I'm not so sure I do anymore. And I want to get to that third hour. I think Kemba Walker could be a better option at this point. Something we'll get to. But John is with us. College hoops next as we roll on. What is this guy saying?
That's the NBA you're talking about?
Yeah.
The dark
you know,
side.
The sport where the guys get paid legally instead of like college where they get paid under the table.
Right, the dark side of the force.
Uh-huh. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.